welcome to Crazy Talk Podcast. This is Angela Campagna coming to you from Face-to-Face Therapy. We've got some super cool guests and co-hosts. I have one of my favorite co-hosts with me, Bradley Phillips.
Hello.
Hey, Bradley.
How are you?
I'm good. We also have a very popular and exciting guest, Senator Jason Rapert. We're so happy that he joined us. Senator, can you say hello?
Yeah, it's good to be with you. And of course, known Bradley for many, many years. And I'm glad that you reached out. This is an important topic, important issue. So I'm glad to come on and visit with you.
We're glad to have you. We recorded, I think, 2 podcasts ago, and you came up. And I said, you know what? I want to have my friend Jason Rapert on. So, you know, I've been in your office many times. I've discussed different issues. I've seen your passion. I've seen your sympathy. I've seen your empathy. And I've seen you agonize over votes and want to make sure that you make the right decision. And so I thought, hey, let's have him on here and kind of leave, you know, nothing off the table. And I really would just like for my people, my friends to, or I'm sorry, I'd like for folks to just get to hear from my friend Jason Rapert for a while, our senator.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because for me and my podcast, I think it's very important for listeners to be able to connect with you as a person. And I always like to ask sort of what motivates you to be in your career and what drives you to do what you do as a senator, but you're moving on to maybe something even cooler, right?
All right. Well, I am announced for lieutenant governor, and that's a couple years out. But really, for me, you know, first of all, I'm a native Arkansan, so born and raised in the state of Arkansas. And actually, part of who I am, I guess, if you're looking at kind of who someone is, what motivates them, my wife and I got married 30 years ago. We were 18. I'd only been 18 3 months.
No, she was that old.
That's right. You didn't? Okay. she's aging better than I am, right, Bradley?
But a little bit.
We're from Randolph County, Arkansas, near Pocahontas. And we got married and immediately moved to Conway, Arkansas. We came down here with a couple hundred bucks and an old gray car and lots of love. And literally the classic American story. I mean, we had nothing. And so our first meal was on a cardboard box with a towel. You know, everybody gets towels when they get married. And so literally a cardboard box with a towel thrown over it. That was our table over here in our little apartment.
Lady and the Tramp, did you have the
really?
The I'm telling you. Yeah.
But it was one of the best meals I've ever had in my life. We had a little steak dinner on that. And so, you know, we started, you know, very small. Right. Mm-hmm. I didn't come from wealth or come from a rich family. And so worked our way through college. I worked at UPS pitching boxes 2:30 a.m. every day. I would get up and do that 5 days a week, worked our way through college. And so we're working family. Mm-hmm. And so fast forward a little bit, of course, got into the insurance and financial services arena. Actually, opened an office for Edward Jones in Conway, Arkansas. And I was recruited to Merrill Lynch. And then in 2010, I actually made a decision to resign from Merrill Lynch and file a run for the Arkansas Senate. I had never run for office before, and I had a lot of people talking to me about running. And then I began to feel a change. You know, I had been leading mission teams, Angela, to Ghana, West Africa, every year since 2002. And with every single year, we did malaria net distributions.
That's Water for Christ, right?
Well, no, I'm but sorry. They do that as well. But we did water systems. We have helped fund orphanages. Some of the kids that we worked with were AIDS children there in Ghana, West Africa. And actually ultimately led to funding a wonderful project where they rescue kids out of human trafficking, where they rescue the small children. There's a big lake in Ghana called Lake Volta, and they use those kids, they're small, to dive down and untangle their nets, and they just use them for slave labor. And so there's a group, Touch a Life Foundation, our group here in Conway, Arkansas, the Rotary group here in Conway, we helped them fund what is now called the Mike Pike House, which is one of my friends in Rotary that died after we began doing our trips over there. He died from a pulmonary embolism here the very night before we were to travel to cut the ribbon on a water project.
Oh, wow.
And Mike passed away, and he wanted to adopt a Ghanaian child. He was getting ready to be married. And long story short, he died unexpectedly. And of course, that was traumatic for me. But we went, his family said, you've got to go finish the project anyway. So we did. But in honor of Mike, since he didn't get to adopt a child, mm-hmm. we wanted to honor his heart for them. And so we ended up supporting Touch of Life Foundation. And surprisingly, his mother donated funds to Conway Rotary for us to be able to use to for that purpose. Mm-hmm. And so I had been very involved in that, so I'd never run for office
before. Where are you going to? How can folks that are listening support that mission?
Well, they could go to Touch a Life Foundation, or they could get in touch with Conway Rotary Club here in Arkansas and just tell us they wanted to go there. Because we still support projects over there. I got to do a Zoom call with the kids in Conway Rotary a few months ago. And so they can still do that. So to answer your question, running for office, is that I had been very involved in doing mission work and helping in that way and trying to serve others the best that I could. But people wanted me to run for office. And so I prayed about it. As you know, I'm a person of faith. Mm-hmm. And so I prayed about this. And to be honest with you, I felt in my prayer time that God led me to this conclusion. That is, why are you not sacrificing to serve at home at the same level you've sacrificed to serve overseas when your country is now in trouble? Mm-hmm. And little did I know, in the last 10 years, all of the turmoil that we would see in the country. And so I ran, had never run before. Mm-hmm. I was the first Republican elected to my district since the Civil War, they tell me. And so I served a couple of years in what they call a minority. Because mm-hmm. the Republicans had not had a majority in the legislature for 138 years.
Oh, wow.
And then in 2012, Republicans took over the majority, and I've continued to serve. So I've been elected four times altogether, elected first and 10, and reelected three different times. And my Senate term, I will have 12 years in 22, but I've decided to run for lieutenant governor is the choice I've made. And so we're already getting support for that. People can look at jasonraper.com and read a little bit about that. And so thank you for asking me about it. But what drove me to do that is that in my business, I managed money for a living professionally, but I'm also ordained in the ministry. Mm-hmm. And so everything that I do is about helping people, mm-hmm. you know. In fact, all of our social media profiles these days, one day I finally decided, you know, what it is that you do. And I said, I help people.
And, I like it.
And that's what I did in the ministry. I still go and speak at churches. I'll be speaking at two this Sunday. And then in managing money, I help people accomplish their goals that way. And the reason why I made that decision was I felt a compelling desire and need that was pressing on me that I got to stand up and do something. You know, everybody says in business, you know, we need some business people to go out here and try to do something to manage money because politics has been in disarray. Mm-hmm. And so I was one of those people that said, I'm actually going to stop and I'm going to do this. And so we laid aside a lot of personal goals, a lot of personal needs, even for my own family,
right.
and said, we're going to serve. And so I've been in and we've been successful. It's been a great opportunity. But when you stand up for things, sometimes that means you'll get some strong opposition. And I've seen that as well. But what keeps me motivated is when I get those emails, those calls and those messages that say thank you. And the latest thing of many things that we've done is I've stood up for all of the retirees, the state employee retirees, okay. about 13,800 of them.
Yeah.
And the board was going to decide to do away with their prescription drug coverage
for
people over 65 and push them out to what's called Medicare Part D. And I said, you know what? That's not right. That's not fair. Many of these people, I had an 80-year-old couple sent me the most touching message and said, you know, look, he worked 55 years for the state of Arkansas, knowing he took less pay than he could have made in other jobs, knowing that part of that was I get benefits. And here they are over 80 years old, and they're going to take their benefits away from them. So I said, no way, we're not going to do that. And our resistance to that obviously led to the board rescinding their decision, mm-hmm. holding off on it so that we get a chance to at least work on that. So the bottom line, there's so many stories, anecdotal stuff that I could tell you, yeah. and things of that nature. But frankly, it's about helping people and making Arkansas a better place to live, work, and raise your family.
Well, thank you for explaining that, because I did not know a lot of that about you. I do feel like you sort of have the American dream of coming from something and making big changes in the world. And this just came to my mind. I actually have a friend, I won't say her name because I didn't ask permission, but she had actually something sort of, I won't say smaller, but it was big to her, that she reached out to you just on Facebook and you helped her. And she wrote back to me and she said, he really answered me and helped me. And she said he was so awesome. And so I think that that's good that you can use your influence to help bigger or smaller things, which is why I asked you to come here today to help me break stigma. And so I wanted to ask you, you know, I focus on mental health, I focus on suicide. What is, why is that topic important to you? What does it mean to you?
Well, there's a lot of aspects. You know, I have a big family. In my mom's family, there are 8 brothers and sisters, right? Mm-hmm. And then on my father's side, his father, there were 8 of them. So I grew up with a wonderful large family and would get to see them at the holidays on a regular basis. And for me, once you get in the legislature, you realize you're dealing with a lot of issues that impact public health, not the least of which is mental health. And so, you know, for me, when I began to deal with some of those issues, people relate to stories. And so you begin to see individuals' lives and maybe what would impact them and have helped them through a situation. And when I hear about people that actually present sometimes and it ends up with a call to law enforcement and something happens, mm-hmm. there's a mental break of some sort. And a lot of those folks in the old days, they just weren't handled really well, right? Mm-hmm. They would end up maybe getting thrown in jail mm-hmm. for a season and then all the charges that come with that, when really what they needed was some mental health help. They needed some counseling. They need somebody to intervene in their lives. And so all of those things, when people begin to bring those issues, I begin to then reflect a little bit on things. And so on the suicide note, and I know a lot of people don't know this, I have alluded to it a time or two in a committee setting or when I'm talking with mental health advocates. But obviously it's not something people would necessarily know. But I think your program is important because there are people listening that may be dealing with issues themselves, or they have a family member and they're trying to figure out a way that they can get them help or get them assistance. And so for me, I began to reflect back in my own family, Angela, and when I was just a small boy, one of my first memories of somebody within the family circle that had a problem was a call when my mother's aunt had actually took her own life. And it was so sad for everyone, obviously, because you thought everything is okay. I mean, my mother's aunt, her children were primarily grown. They were living their lives. And then all of a sudden, one day, we got the call that my aunt had jumped off of a bridge in Randolph County into what's known locally as the Fauchy River. It's actually the Fourche, which is a French, but everybody up there pronounces it Fauchy River. So if I said the Fush, nobody would know what I'm talking about, but the Fauchy River. And I just remember how horrible that was. And even the fact that my aunt had done that, people didn't want to speak about it. People didn't want
stigma.
They just say she died rather than actually address what happened. And what's sad in that, I know we don't have a lot of time, so I'll tell this pretty quickly, is that in that own situation, again, this is outside of my immediate family, this is extended family. A few years later, her younger sister, the only 2 girls in my grandfather's family, she took her life as well. She walked down a farm path, he got dressed. They now know that my other aunt, she was a great aunt, got dressed up, fixed herself up like she might be going to a function or to church or to party, and walked down this farm path and jumped in the same river in which her older sister had jumped into and took her life. And one of the most tragic parts of that is that to know that both of those 2 ladies couldn't swim. And so you think about the fact that the turmoil that they must have gone through in doing that. And again, there was another time. So that was the second one that I remember in that family. And then you think about these were sisters. Tragically later, her husband then took his life. We still don't know of anything going on in that family. But they were struggling with real obvious mental health issues. we probably think that the ants were dealing with maybe just bipolar situation,
mm-hmm.
and obviously some depression, but they didn't reach out and get the help because you just didn't talk about those things. There was a stigma to it. And I have been so sad because I know today we know mm-hmm. that in many cases they find they have a small chemical imbalance sometimes. And just like a diabetic could take insulin to live a normal life, I believe my two aunts would be alive today had they had some access to mental health and that they had taken advantage of that and maybe still be with us even today. There's only one sibling out of that family still living because they've all aged and passed away. It was very tragic that those two aunts, the only two women in that immediate family, took their lives. That ended up later, just to tell the whole thing, you know, you had three right there. And then later in life, one of the aunt's sons drove back to Arkansas from Alabama, drove up in front of his childhood home. He had been going through a marital problem in Alabama, drove up in front of that home, run a hose from his exhaust pipe into a window in that truck. I think it was a truck, and took his life. So tragic. I mean, it just make you want to cry when you think about what that has meant. And our family, mm-hmm. through my mom's family, have tried to say, don't wait. Don't go silent. Don't isolate yourself mm-hmm. from those that love you, whether it's your family or friends, to reach out. And also for us to be sensitive when somebody's not reaching out.
Mm-hmm.
And try to reach out to them and encourage them. And so I don't mind sharing with your listeners mm-hmm. That it's something we should address. We're having a crisis of suicide amongst teens like we've never seen before. We have an increasing amount of suicides, especially with the COVID-19 issues that are going on. And this is something that our country, our churches, our communities, lawmakers need to address. It's very devastating. And if somebody's listening out there today, and this may be the last thing you're listening to, and you're going through a problem like that, call Angela and
yes.
get some help from her. Call someone.
Yes.
Call the suicide hotline. I know you may think it may be your answer, the only way out, but it actually leaves even more turmoil after you're gone. And we all go through bad times. Life is about how you get through the peaks and valleys. It's never a straight line. And so I encourage people, because I know that my family will never get over a lot of the hurt that we've had. So, but that's a little bit about why it's important to me. And that tells you a very personal side.
Well, you know, all of our listeners are either going through something themselves or they have family members that are in similar situations. And so one of the things that we like to educate them on is how to go and advocate for mental health. And so a lot of that has to do with calling someone like you when there is pertinent legislation that deals with mental health. Mm-hmm. So one of the questions that I wanted to ask you, and this is kind of for our listeners who do want to advocate, when you're sitting there and you're making a decision, and this isn't a decision, this is a piece of legislation that's not on the news. It's not, you know, something everyone's talking about. It's something that not lobbyists are coming up to you. It's something that folks at home care about that you're getting letters from. What do you take into account from your constituents when you read? What helps you make decisions whenever you're faced with a situation like that?
Well, obviously, stories are important. The Joshua Ashley Pauley Act, if you remember that. Do you remember the name?
I don't.
Joshua Ashley Pauley was the young man that overdosed on opiates and died just about a block from the Conway Regional Hospital.
Oh, man.
And, you know, I saw that issue, and then I drove by and saw his father standing on the sidewalk with a sign, and I had seen that, and it was on the news, and I just stopped, and I just wanted to tell him we're there to support him and help him. And I'll never forget when I met him. I'd never met him before in my life. And I just stopped, just introduced myself. And he just kind of dropped his sign and embraced me and hugged me. And that's the first time in a long time that I ever felt like somebody just went right through me. He just released. He just, when he hugged me, mm-hmm. it's like when he hugged me, he just walked right through me altogether. And I don't know if you've ever felt that way.
It's amazing, man.
He's a good guy, and And we became friends. The bottom line is, not only we become friends through that, but I told him, I said, take your pain and see if we can help people. And so he began to talk to me, and he had asked, because he'd been telling me that he'd been asking for people to discuss it with him, and there was not a lot of takers. Aww. And so that ended with me working with Joshua's parents, and they came and they told their story. And I had people tell me that they've been down there in those halls lobbying, just like you have, Bradley, and they've been involved for 30, 40 years. They said it was some of the most powerful testimony that they had ever heard. And what we did with that, and this is important for your listeners, if you're with somebody and they're doing drugs, what happens is a lot of times when somebody's out there partying together, they don't make the call for fear that they're going to get in trouble for making the call. So we passed the Josh, and I wanted to name it in honor of their son. So the Joshua Ashley Pauley Act says that if someone is in danger of dying and you call for help like that, that you will not be charged for drug usage, okay, if that's a scenario. Because we want people to make the call, and we've been told that it's been helping people. And then
that's amazing, because I did not know that. Because even as a therapist, I've been in some pretty sticky situations where the person has some type of controlled substance and I'm needing to call the police. But even me, I'm like worried about all these things. And I've seen the commercials about that. Yeah. I didn't know that. I had no idea that that's where that came from.
Yeah, it really touched me.
Yeah.
And I have such respect for Ken and his family. And
they fed most of this town for years and years and years and years. So
yeah,
the restaurant folks. So.
Okay.
Well, and it's very tragic for them. I mean, that was a loss. A young life, had a great future ahead of him. And simply, there's two messages out of that. One is, don't abuse drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Secondarily is, call for help and then mm-hmm. let something come out of that. So the best way in advocacy is that obviously in the state Senate in Arkansas, we all have a little over 90,000. There's 35 of us in the Senate. And so it's impossible when you've got big issues to respond personally to every single thing, because they don't give us a lot of staff in which to do that in the state Senate. But I tried my best to reach out. The best way is to contact us officially. Mm-hmm. A lot of people do reach out through social media these days. Mm-hmm. And I'm sometimes amazed at how personal and serious some of the messages they use that for.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to catch them the best that I can, but I tell people, I even have a message on my Facebook to say, if this is a very important issue, please email me because mm-hmm. we can handle it that way.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I never knew that, because a lot of people use social media. I think it's sort of a younger culture.
It is.
And Facebook for very intimate things.
Yeah.
But French Hills told us that that's not considered actually a formal way of communication.
That's right.
Is that
okay? Well, you know, again, you got different people with different viewpoints, but for me anyway,
that's not a legal thing.
For me anyway, I will tell you that, you know, as a citizen legislator, we don't have government run social media accounts for individuals.
You don't?
No.
Oh, okay.
And so
run it yourself.
Oh yeah, I've always run it myself. And then when there's campaigns, I may have a volunteer or something that helps be the admin for that.
Yeah.
But I don't have any government paid staff that runs any social media account whatsoever. And that's an important detail. So the thing is, I tell people, you know, just like with the latest issue that's come up, phone calls to the state Senate and leaving a message about a specific issue is a great way to reach out to us. And obviously sending those emails. And then there are times when an issue is such that somebody's so close to it that they will reach out and we'll schedule a meeting to meet with them. I've sat down with a lot of people and we visit with them that way. But being respectful, I mean, things are so volatile these days. There's a lot of people that say things they shouldn't say. And public citizen legislators are just like you and everyone else. And they've got families, they run businesses. And so, you know, it gets a little tough when you've got people that get a hold of them and just what they call dress them down, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And so I encourage you, you know, if you want somebody to be respectful with you, mm-hmm. then show respect. Try to be cordial in your communication, because when somebody's coming at you in a very hostile way, that typically shuts them down. I mean, you're the counselor, but it shuts them down on the ability to hear from them.
And I want to back up a little bit that I want to thank you so much for telling your personal story and being brave enough to do that. And then even showing us that the other family who did that, I think if we can be braver about sharing our personal stories and our families, that that's going to bring us together. And like you said, the stories make the difference, right?
They do. And so when you're reaching out to legislators, you know, when I look at emails, you know, so there, I try to handle them. I have to do triage.
Yeah.
Sometimes people just want you to know what they think. And that's, and you get that on an issue. Yeah. But when somebody says they need something, you know, I try to grab those as quick as I can to make sure that either I get staff to help me or I'll reach out directly if it's something that's really critical and urgent for people.
I will
say. And we've done that on any number of
things. And this is sort of my opinion as a therapist. I think if you're struggling with something and you're very emotional and you're at a place where you're not managing your emotions, that's when you need to go to your therapist or your counselor or someone in your church that you're close to sort of sort through what is the most important thing I can push across to someone like to your office, right? And I tell all my clients, and I live by this myself, when I get hot and angry and heated, 48 hours before you act on some decision. Now, I'm not talking about suicide. Suicide, we have the number right here, 1-800-273-8255. Someone's always manning that number by text or telephone. That's crisis. We have different levels of personal turmoil. A lot of people have a therapist. I get calls, texts daily, you know, but I always advise if you're taking it to that next step, 48 hours before acting on that. Does that make sense?
It does. In social media, maybe don't press enter before you do a lot of that stuff, because I've seen some people really destroy their lives. And what one thing to say on the social media, because I've seen my fair share of that from some people, is that it is a crime to use electronic communication to send harassing messages, whether that's Facebook, whether that's Twitter, whether that's email. And some people do cross that line into threatening or harassing. And some of them even take it to not just what I call terroristic threatening, they're actually death threats. And so a lot of social media, because it's so instant, I think that there's going to be a lot of data about mental health and social interaction that's been affected by what is a fantastic tool, but it can be used for good or evil.
I can say in my career, I've had people on both parties being charged with that harassing communications, which is something that the city attorney reviews, is my understanding. Like, that is law. And I really have worked with some of my clients to where this is going on. They just deactivate their accounts. They deactivate their accounts. They work it through with me or their therapist or close family member to just prevent that. Because when you're in that range of not managing your emotions, it's like you said, it's so easy to just hit click, click, send, and you can't get that.
Well, look, I mean, we all now know people lose long-time friendships now over some little spat that they
literally unfriended.
Yes, literally unfriended. And I've
heard or may not have a family member that's happened to.
Well, you know, so you've got all those sorts of things. But, you know, the important thing is, and why I wanted to, when you asked me to come on, is that I absolutely support people taking time to find some help if they're having mental issues. And then all of us need to take time. And I'm a busy person. And I know that my family's always saying that, you know, you need to slow down. A lot of friends say that, don't know how you're doing it, all those things. And so it is important to take time and find a way to find peace in your life. A constant state of stress is not a place that anybody wants to stay.
You know, one of the things that we talk about, just to piggyback, I had something else I was going to say, but I want to piggyback off that. One of the things we talk about is self-care. Now, we've been using the word self-care for a long time, but it seems like the past 6 months, self-care is everywhere. So you kind of touched on it. What is your self-care regimen? I know that you don't go out and get manicures regularly or anything, but what do you do to take care of yourself? You know, my favorite thing is Stephen Covey's number 7, where you sharpen the saw. You don't just lay the saw down and hope it gets sharp. I know you're not one type of the person that says, I'm going to lay down and do nothing all day, yeah, and that's going to sharpen my saw. But what do you do to sharpen your saw? What do you do to go home on the weekend and then come back Monday feeling refreshed and energized?
Yeah. Well, it really comes back to my faith. You know, my faith is the most important thing to me. And, you know, personally, I have lived part of my life without God, and I've lived part of my life with God. And I've always found that life is better with God. It really is. And I know there may be some people listening, they may not even have a faith in God or belief in God. But for me, I believe fundamentally that God created the heavens and the earth, and he created us. And you know, what's wonderful about the scripture is that if you want to see some stories about people that go through really tough times and go through even some mental anguish, mm-hmm, and come through that, the Bible's full of those kind of people. And what I found about God in the New Testament, when you find about Jesus, is Jesus never turned away somebody that was asking him for help. That's a key thing. He always took the time. And of course, there are many miracles in the New Testament. And so for me, the Word of God says that the Bible's the bread of life, the bread of life. And so for me, I think it's important to feed your spiritual man just as much as you do your physical man. And I think, in my view, that there's always something missing. And as a counselor, you know, you've got people that, mm-hmm, they can't put their finger on what's going on. Now, for me, I believe that we're body, mind, and soul, mm-hmm, body, mind, and spirit, right? Mm-hmm. And when we neglect the spiritual side, which does relate completely to the mental health, mm-hmm, that we have, then we're really not complete. We're, mm-hmm, really not taking care. You know, you can learn how to do things, and you can feed your body and exercise, but you need to tend to your spiritual side. So for me, it's trying to take time to let God speak to me through his word. The Bible says that the word is God, right? It's the word of God. And so for me, it's that. But, you know, I like to play the fiddle a lot. And so I have a great time with my friends all over Arkansas and around the country, playing bluegrass music and checking out and enjoying a lot of fun. And you know what? I found in those times, Democrats and Republicans get along a lot better when you got some good music going on. So that's what I like to do.
That's true. Well, you touched on the body. You know, when folks get this podcast next week, it's not going to be big news. But the big news today is that President Trump has COVID. Mm-hmm. And you recently had your own experience. You want to touch on that briefly and tell people what was it like?
I sure did. I don't know if you're going to have time for all this, but maybe you can do part two.
When I saw your Facebook post that said, folks, I'm down, I thought,
Yeah. Well, look, you know, number one, COVID-19 is a serious issue that obviously we now all know is a serious issue. And, you know, around January, February, when we all began to start hearing about this a little bit. And so I had already been involved at the Capitol with wearing masks, checking temperature, doing all those things. And so I was doing all those things, and I'm not necessarily one of the at-risk groups that were out there. But in July, I actually journaled my experience because I didn't know what was happening at the time. But I prepared our family that, you know, hey, look, statistically, one or all of us may end up getting COVID-19. And so I was still exercising the caution, but I spoke out of state in a state where they were not exercising as much caution. So people said, where did you get it? I don't know. I could have got it on a gas pump somewhere. Somebody come by and pat me on the shoulders. I could have got it anywhere because it's a virus. Mm-hmm. So nobody's at fault for a virus, no more than you are the flu or anything else that you might get. But I got started feeling, and this is important for somebody that might be listening, is that I just started feeling tremendous body aches. That's what I first felt. And, you know, flu has some of that. Mm-hmm. And so I started feeling that on like a Thursday night. By Friday evening, I developed a fever. And then, and that's when I realized, I immediately just isolated from my family. And so I was 6 days with fever, okay, just trying to get some help. I immediately went after the fever hit me on Saturday, and I got swabbed at the Baptist Hospital in Conway, but I didn't get any test results until the Tuesday. And those test results came back negative.
Oh, okay? Wow.
And so what happened is that there was no attention given that, hey, you've got COVID-19, because I had what they term as a false negative. Mm-hmm. When they called me and gave me that great news that I was negative, I said, well, that's wonderful, but I'm very sick.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had never been in a situation where I literally just either was sitting in a recliner or laying on a bed and not able to really function. And I didn't even watch television during that entire period of time in those 6 days. And so I knew I was sick, you know, mm-hmm. and I was trying to get better, you know, trying to pull myself out of that. And so they took me to the emergency room and did a rapid test. And when they tested me, they said, you're positive. So that's when I was, you know, they then immediately said, we're going to admit you in the hospital. I was treated with remdesivir, with budesonide inhalers. They also gave me steroid shots and were giving me shots every day in the stomach. Those are very memorable to keep you from having blood clots. So I had oxygen. It was everything that they could do short of a ventilator, and thank the Lord I didn't go into a situation needing a ventilator. And so 6 days in the hospital, the doctor told me, he said, as much as you can do your breathing exercises, as much as you can move around, that will help you get out of here. So I took that to heart. And so I just constantly in there, because you're in there alone, they take you in this COVID room and there's, you know, nobody can visit you, and they cut a hole in the wall and they're sucking that air out in what's called a negative air environment. And so I did go through that process. And of course, from the mental health side of that,
mm-hmm.
About 2 days into it, Angela, I started getting literally death threats and people wishing I would die. So it was people wishing you would die, and then there were some threats. Sent pictures of my wife and my daughters to me, telling me what they were going to do to my family.
Oh, you mean like, did they take these pictures, or did they
grabbing pictures? Oh, grabbing that they pictures might off. Do okay. that.
Oh my
very,
word.
Very threatening. And so this is important for people to know. I don't mind saying this, because we've got to stop being so horrible to each other. These people didn't know if I was on a ventilator near death, but they were sending in sometimes voicemails just filled. And I have no hatred for people that just simply see an issue differently than me. But we have gotten to a point in America, if not the entire world, where if you see the world differently, you feel like your only answer to that is to pour hatred on someone and silence them and cancel their viewpoints. That I don't believe in that. I absolutely have friends that see the world a different way, and I could still be friends with them.
Mm-hmm.
When we talk about an issue, I'm going to put my viewpoint out there. But I never was raised, nor I dreamed of a society in which you would wish somebody would die simply because they're a Republican. One of the messages simply said, it would be a dividend for you to die to teach the Republicans a lesson.
Mm-hmm.
And they would say this, of course, using expletives and things of this nature. And so I just decided, you know what? The best response to that is come out of there stronger than I've ever been. And so I just did my exercises and kept up with that. But I urge people to, again, there's 2 points out of that story. Number one, treat people the way you want to be treated. That's the old golden rule. Treat people the way you want to be treated. Don't be that way to others. The second part of it is, we're not done with COVID-19. I've got friends, family that have dealt with it. I know two pastors that just died in Northeast Arkansas from this. And I'm praying that we get good treatment, number one, which they're trying to improve on that. I encourage people to go search that out. There's a lot of ways that you can build your system to not even get COVID, but that's another story, another podcast. But yes, I had it. I really thank God, and I thank all the people that helped work on me to get me better, and praying that we find a way to get through this thing quickly.
Senator, thank you so much for sharing that with us,
yes,
and everything else. I really appreciate you being here.
Good to be
I
here.
Can't wait to share this. I thank you for helping me break stigma. I thank you for Bradley for bringing us together. Do you have anything else you'd like listeners to No.
I don't. I just want to thank you too, Angela. I don't know a lot about you, but just knowing that you're a counselor, you've given your life now in your career to helping other people. And that's very noble. You know, as I say, I'm a person of faith. Mm-hmm. You're kind of, from my perspective, you're kind of the hands and feet of Jesus to people sometimes where they need somebody to love on them in a way that nobody else can. And so I applaud you for what you do. And I thank you for everyone in our state that tries to help people get a better handle on life and to find peace.
Thank you so much.
And I'm a noble lobbyist.
How did we let him in the room?
And we're grateful for you too, and you're all right too, Bradley. No, you're great. Yeah, thanks for having me.
No, and we know that Bradley has really put out there and fought for some causes that are important to all of us. So thank you, Bradley, and thank you to listeners for listening in. Just one more time, if you happen to be struggling with thoughts of suicide, that number is 1-800-273-8255. It's always text or someone there all the time, 24/7. We thank you for listening. Thank you for your support, and we'll be back soon.